Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Chelsea Erson, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Gentry. This episode features a conversation with a young woman who is a writer and musician named Chelsea Erson. She has a podcast called Dear Young Rocker. So it's been kind of a weird week. Had a little bit of a nagging headache all day. I have a bunch of nephews, and one of them survived a drug overdose yesterday. And thank God, probably by the time you hear this, he'll be in somewhere. He's able to kind of steer him in the direction of some help, and, you know, hopefully he'll get better. It's a pretty bad time. I just got to thinking about that, and, you know, a lot of the work that Chelsea does, it's kind of centers on adolescence and how tough it is to be an adolescent. I had a pretty tough adolescence. Experienced some emotional abuse from an older brother, a lot of it actually. And when I say emotional abuse, what I mean is when someone hurts you intentionally. So, you know, I went through a lot of that stuff as a kid. I don't really know how young it started, but I remember it being especially hard in my adolescence and from then on. And, you know, if you've listened to this show, you know, I've talked about I'm a person in long-term recovery. And for me, that means I haven't had a drink or any other mood-altering substances since 1996. And at that point, you know, I was 23 years old and I needed to get away from home. And, you know, the main reason I knew I had to get away, I couldn't stop drinking, and I needed to get away because I needed to get away from the perpetrator of that abuse. You know, I had a really difficult relationship with my older brother who I loved, but, you know, it just wasn't good. He was a jerk. And it was very, very painful. And, you know, through my adolescence, going through that stuff, I didn't know how to deal with it. You know, I didn't know how to deal with it. And like a lot of kids, you know, I ended up getting into drinking, and eventually that became a method for me to intentionally change the way I felt. And eventually I started doing it to avoid the way I was feeling. And, you know, I was just lost. I was really lost. But when it came time for me to make that change and get away, you know, that brother had a little boy who was about 3 years old who I was close to. And one of the hardest things about leaving was leaving him and knowing who and what I was leaving him with. So, you know, the first 10 years after I left, I mean, I stayed pretty close to him. I spent time with him every time I got home. And he talked to me about the things he was going through with his dad. And it was tough for him, you know. And all that kind of stopped when he entered adolescence. When I say it all stopped, I mean, he stopped talking to me about what was going on. And I kind of knew then that he was beginning to get into trouble himself. And so here we are all these years later, and he's been struggling with addiction for 10 years, probably longer. And, yeah, I've done everything I could to help him, and it's just incredibly sad. But, you know, adolescence is really hard for all kids, let alone if you have stuff like that to deal with. And, you know, we're just kind of weird at that age. And, you know, we're not really kids anymore, but we're not adults yet. And our body's doing different stuff. And, you know, we just need help figuring it out. And Chelsea has provided a resource for kids to help them figure it out. And I just love the work she's doing. And we had a really great conversation. She plays a song at the end, and I hope you enjoy it. Chelsea Urson. Thank you for doing this. I appreciate you taking the time. How are you doing today?
Yeah, thank you. I'm doing pretty well today. I kind of chilled a little bit today. I had a bit of a migraine, and I decided to sort of take it easy on myself because of that instead of pushing through and working. And I went for a nice long walk outside. It's a pretty day and saw some birds and saw the lake, so I'm feeling good now.
Good. So can you talk a little bit about what it is that you do?
Sure.
How you spend your, what a typical day does look like when you don't have a migraine?
Yeah. So I guess I'm a writer, a musician, and a podcaster. That sums it all up. So I typically write every morning. At least I get myself to my desk every morning with the intention of writing. And right now I'm working on my scripts for the second season of my podcast, Dear Young Rocker, which is most of my work and creative life right now, is making this show. And it's a memoir of becoming a musician, starting from young adolescent age, like middle school, and also a series of letters to my younger self with advice and just stuff I wish I had known, wish someone had told me. And I put a lot of music in it. Like I said, I'm a musician, and so usually at some point in my day, I also pick up a guitar and just play around a little bit or work on a song. And then sometimes I just start a new project or just doodle or journal or something. And it might not go anywhere, but I like to relax at the end of the day with something that, that isn't, you know, for anyone else. It's just whatever's in my head. So most like of what that. I do.
So the the podcast, is it paying the bills? Or so there's no 9 to 5. There's no, this is what you do.
No. Well, I, like many people, was laid off. But I wasn't actually laid off for the pandemic. I was laid off in mid-December. And at that point, I was producing my podcast full time. So it was kind of like almost a blessing, because when you're producing a podcast for a big network, all of a sudden there's a lot of duties, making promotional material and stuff. And so even though, no, it does not at all pay the bills like a full time job, I needed that little bit of time to work on that full time. So I finished my season, and my season ended the week that the COVID-19 stay home order was put in place, and everyone else got laid off and there were no jobs. So I'm still technically unemployed, but working every day on stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, this is an interesting time we're going through, isn't it? I mean, it's, I feel like the world and is just going through like a hard reset, and it's giving us all this opportunity to take a good hard look at ourselves and what we're doing with our time, and have kind of reevaluate, is this really what I want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell me about how this podcast, how did you conclude that you wanted it to use it as a channel for this expression? Why a podcast?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is kind of like necessity is the mother of invention. So I didn't, you know, go to radio journalism school or anything like that. I had no experience in podcasts or radio. I went to grad school for creative writing. And I initially went in as a fiction major, quickly changed to nonfiction when I realized I just wanted to write about my own experiences and use that to connect to other people. And anyway, I finished that with a memoir. So my thesis was a memoir about being a musician, and it was called Bass Player. And I had all the intention in the world of publishing that as a book, and spending my life writing books and teaching. And I quickly found out after talking to book agents and editors that they just weren't interested in publishing a memoir by someone who, in so many words, just isn't famous, who doesn't have a platform. Because I guess publishing houses just don't have the marketing budgets anymore to just put money behind unproven people. So you can kind of do that with like a novel or something, but if it's a book about yourself, if you're not someone who people are just going to buy your book for who you are. Even the nicest agents and editors said, you know, I love your story, this is important, but you need to work on getting yourself out there and building a platform, blah, blah, blah. And that was a little disheartening. And then one day I found myself doing some writing for a podcast, and I just kind of put it together and was like, oh, I could write, you know, a podcast. Oh, I've already written a book, and anyone can put a podcast out there, I found out. Mm-hmm. And it can be in Apple iTunes alongside all the famous podcasts. Unlike a book, you publish it yourself, but doesn't go to Barnes and Nobles. It's, you know, in your garage. So I just decided to go for it. And I initially did the whole thing by myself. I wanted the story to be in the world, and I believed in it. And I made it happen.
Wow. I love that. You know, when it's, I kind of had a similar experience, because I've always written too. And, the challenge I've had is not knowing what I wanted to do with my voice exactly. So that's, so it has taken me a long time to figure that out, and I kind of have figured it out now, but like right before I did, I sat down with a publisher, like, I guess it was, oh my gosh, I can't believe it was 5 years ago now. And I showed them some of my work, you know, it was the publisher that publishes all the Chicken Soup for the Soul books.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I live in South Florida and they're down here. And, you know, they used to be a little more present in the marketplace. And they've had other, you know, authors on their roster, but that's where they really kind of hit it big for a while. Anyway, that's basically, I got the same sort of answer, you know, which was, we like it. We're not saying yes, but we're not saying no, but you need a platform. So then, then I had a blog that I really wasn't doing anything with. So then I started to mess with that more and kind of try to figure out what I wanted to do with it. And, you know, the kind of writing I do, it's not like just stuff that I can pump out at a moment. You know, I mean, it just, it's deep and thoughtful and emotionally evocative. And like, it's not, it's, I can't just snap my fingers and make it happen. You know, it's.
Right. You can't just do a blog post a day. Or
no, it's not like that.
Right. Yeah.
So then I start thinking about, well, what can I write every day? You know, and I have some journalism experience and I always liked writing about people. Mm-hmm. So I decided, and I love creative people. I love learning about creative people and kind of what makes them tick and just people who have the audacity to go out there and define themselves however they choose. That's just, I've always admired that trait in people. So I thought, well, I'll write profile stories. And so meanwhile, I kind of had somebody mention to me a podcast and I started to kick it around and never really took it all that seriously, but kind of decided I was going to do it once I figured out what to do with it. And so I interviewed this artist who's become a friend. I sat down with her twice for an hour each time and recorded it all. And then I kept telling myself, you know, you have this, you need to really need to sit down and write. You need to write this. And I kept, you know, like kind of feeling this pressure to do it. And then finally it hit me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to write it. I want to, I want to have a conversation and this is what I'm going to do with my podcast. So that's where it came from. And I'm still kind of figuring out exactly where to go with my writing, but, I'm a lot closer than I was before. So that's good. And it's become much more of a satisfying creative outlet than I ever imagined it would be.
Yeah. Same here. I never envisioned myself, like I said, working in radio or audio or whatever, and the best laid plans, you know, sometimes they don't happen. My plan was totally books. And then I just fell in love with making it, with making the podcast. And if I hadn't, I don't think I would have done it, because it's so many hours of work and learning curve. But yeah, it's fun.
It is. It is. And honestly, if I did it the way you did it, I don't think it would be as fun for me, because I mean, yours is really scripted and I really love to just do this, you know, to just have a conversation and let it happen organically. But so would you say you're essentially serializing your book? Is that basically what you're doing?
Yeah. In a way. So it was not, that makes it almost sound easy. It still doesn't sound easy. But my original plan was to, you know, chop it up, and then each chapter of the book would become an episode. Mm-hmm. And then I quickly realized, I sat down and started reading a chapter, and I went, oh, each chapter, if I read it aloud with, you know, a storytelling pacing, it becomes like 3 hours, even though it takes me whatever, 30 minutes right. to read it.
Right.
And I didn't want my episodes to be long. I wanted people to, you know, not feel intimidated to click on them if they weren't sure about me.
Right.
So I had to completely like rewrite pretty much from scratch each chapter, which became an episode. And then, you know, like you, I like having a conversation, and I like, you know, probing someone's brain and everything. So I decided to do that with myself since I didn't have a co-host or guests. And so I added these letters at the end where I talk to my younger self. And even though that, you know, I write them down beforehand and I record the scripts, that was the really enjoyable creative process rather than just reading my book. Because I had to really, I mean, my 16-year-old self, or for all of us, I feel like it feels like a totally different person. It feels like an alien. They think, you know, teenage people think differently. They care about different things. Their feelings are so different. So I had to really kind of interview her in my head. Mm-hmm. I know this is getting a little out there, but it was really like I had to sit down and try to look through old boxes of stuff and think about how she would have talked and what defenses she had up. And so I got to really kind of like have a conversation with my younger self. And that's the part of the podcast that I think a lot of people feel the most touched by, because a lot of us don't think, or we think about our younger selves, like I said, like an alien or somewhat like, oh, thank God I'm not a teenager anymore and I'm not so naive. But actually taking those teenage emotions and thoughts seriously was a real challenge, and really being empathetic toward everything she was going through instead of saying like, oh, stop being whatever I was told at that age, stop being so emotional. It's all in your head. You need to get out of your head and grow up and blah, blah, blah. So really being patient with that, and then being creative and reimagining her life and how I could be a friend to her. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like, yeah, that's what made me really excited about this more than just redoing something I had already made.
Well, I know you've listened to some of this podcast, mm-hmm. but I mean, you have no idea. Like, this is the intersection of what we're talking about right now.
That's good.
Yeah. And one of the things that, well, a pivotal moment in my life was I stopped drinking as a young adult,
mm-hmm.
and I got help. And when I was 23, and that led me into this career basically of, counseling, helping other people. And so that's, you know, what I've done since then, in one way or another. I've been on the marketing side of it. I've been on the business side, and I've been on the clinical side, and also my writing experience really tied into that well, because, you know, somebody's got to write web copy, you know, and somebody's mm-hmm. got to write brochure yep. copy. So I got to kind of weave all that stuff together. And, you know, when I decided to create this podcast, I've been doing this kind of work for so long that I have a lot of contacts and resources, that I could, you know, bring to bear, but I didn't want it to be about addiction and recovery, or, you know, I wanted it to be more universal than that.
Mm-hmm.
But so one of the, people who I've had the opportunity to befriend over the years is a woman named Lucia Capicchione, who's been, she was the first guest I had. She's been on a number of different episodes, and she wrote, she's written like a number of bestsellers. And basically what we know as inner child work is her work.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're talking about, it is what you're talking about doing with your podcast are basically the methods that she teaches people to use to heal.
Mm.
So, yeah. And I would encourage you to check out her work. And if nothing else, listen to some of the episodes that I have with her and hear her story. And basically, she is an art therapist. That's how she, well, she first was a teacher and an artist, and eventually became an art therapist as well. And she did that because she learned in her childhood she had a physical ailment that kept her bedridden for a very long time. And basically journaling is what healed her, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's, it's happened several times over in her life. But what you're talking about, you know, giving voice to that inner child is, I mean, it's something that I've done in my own personal work to try to heal my wounds as an adult, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it is definitely therapeutic. So yeah. I imagine it's been satisfying for you in that way as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just so funny. Like, once again, plans never really work out. I just wrote, I don't think, maybe deep down I knew why I was writing this book and this podcast, and maybe that was the reason, self-healing, but I didn't think of it that way when I started, even though that became like the best part of it. Well, really the best part of it is healing other people, mm-hmm. or and having other people write in and say, you know, I never want to think about my teenage self, but you've helped me like even realize I have anxiety. Some people mm-hmm. haven't even ever dealt with the fact that they've had depression or anxiety before. And in their 50s or 60s, they're letting me know, some, you know, a stranger mm-hmm. about their experience with it, and saying they're, you know, going through self-discovery, or they're connecting with their children, their teenage children, or understanding them better. And that's, you know, the most beautiful thing I've gotten out of it. But when I started, I was just like, oh, I know music helped me as a kid, and that's what I wanted to write about, was just that I was angry and I had all these feelings I didn't know what to do with, and it was playing in rock bands that helped me work through that stuff, and I think is what kept me from, you know, dealing with my feelings in the not good ways that a lot of teenagers do. I never luckily got into drugs or alcohol as a kid. But I think if I hadn't had music in my life, I might have, and I don't know where I would have ended up without it. And I just wanted to show people like that it's such an important outlet. It just seems like, oh, just playing in a garage band, whatever. Unless, you know, it's like, unless you're trying to be a famous musician, like, you know, you got to give up the band at some point. But to me, it was really life-saving, just my little garage band. And especially as a girl, because I think boys are, if they're, you know, misbehaving or they're getting written up at school a lot, it's like, okay, he, you know, this teenage boy, he has aggression he can't deal with, and that's understandable. He has testosterone. We need to just get him into football, or we need him to blow off steam some other way. But when girls are having trouble, they're not usually given an aggressive outlet like that. It's not seen as normal. Like, even though we have the same hormones, like we can't sit still and we want to punch things too. But if we do that, we're just seen as problematic immediately, not like, oh, normal teenagers, you know, they need an aggressive outlet. They need something physical and creative to get this energy out. So I just want more parents and teens who feel weird about themselves to just see, like, adolescents need an outlet. And I think rock music is one of the best ones they could have.
I know it definitely came through for me in a lot of ways and still does, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so, what's your go-to? Like, what have you listened to today?
Today? Today I kind of stumbled across, this Facebook page for, I think it was called like the decade 78 to 87. And it was all like new wave and like 80s goth music, which isn't something I've, you know, really taken a deep dive into, but I think it's cool. And there were a bunch of videos, early videos of The Cure, and other like new wave bands. And I kind of like listened to a bunch of those while I was having my crappy headache time. And it made me feel a lot better when I was feeling a little bummed out. I kind of just danced around in my chair a little bit.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was a little kid when that was out in the world, and, you know, having grown up in the Midwest, The Cure, that type of, I mean, it was kind of fringe.
Yeah.
You know, definitely wasn't mainstream. And you know, punk was definitely a thing when I was a kid, and it was, I mean, talk about aggression. I mean, it was, I wouldn't go as far as to say outcast sort of, but kind of, you know, I mean, you definitely weren't part of the mainstream at all, if that's how you were living. And that was the kind of music you were listening to. And, you know, one of the things I kind of hated, so I graduated from high school in 1991. And, where I grew up, there was great classic rock. But there wasn't anything that felt like my music at all. You know, it was all like, the classic rock guys who were still touring and still making records, but past their prime, and, you know, nothing to really get excited about. And then I remember the Black Crowes seemed to know that was a big one. I loved that first record. And then, you know, what really, the Seattle stuff is really what changed everything, because it's like, as soon as that Nirvana Nevermind record came out, it's like it opened the musical world up in a way that it wasn't. I mean, it was like everything was available now to listen to, and everything, it just changed everything. It did. And it was nice to finally feel like I had music that I could get connected to. And then now, as an adult, I realized there was all kinds of other music coming out at the same time that I just wasn't exposed to. Like, you know, I don't know if you know about Wilco. Have you ever listened to Wilco?
Yeah, a little bit in high school.
Wilco, Uncle Tupelo, which was the band that preceded them. All that was happening at the same time that the whole grunge thing was going on, the alt country thing, which I got into after it was all basically over.
Yeah.
I could talk music forever too. I love music.
Oh yeah. Well, me too.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny mentioning Lucia. Lucia is a music lover too. And I have a, you know, I love jazz, classic jazz. And I saw, I don't know what it was you posted, something about favorite live records maybe. And it was Colm, Keith Jarrett.
Yep.
And Lucia bought me that record one time because, you know, I was into Miles Davis and Mingus and those guys, but I never listened to Keith Jarrett. And she was here staying with me at one point and left to go out and about. And she comes back and had stopped at Barnes & Noble and picked up two Keith Jarrett CDs for me. And that was one of them. That, and there's another one, The Melody at Night with You. I don't know if you know that one, but I like that a lot too.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I don't have much of a jazz collection. That's another thing. Like, I just feel like music is endless, and I just love how much more there is to discover. But that one live record, I think it's one of the only live records I own, which is why I answered the question with that. But also, that's just, yeah, that's the most connected I've felt to any jazz music so far in my life. It's just so flowing and like endless. I just love a record you can put on and like close your eyes and tune out everything and just be in it from the first note to the last note and forget about everything else. So that really provides that.
Yeah. What about lyrics? Are you a lyric person or more a melody person?
For me, I emotionally respond to music first, but if I connect with the words, it just heightens it to another level. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of music that, for instance, like, I don't know, a girlfriend of mine will say, like, I love this new album by whoever, Angel Olsen or something. And I'm like, okay, yeah, the lyrics are poetic, or I totally get what she's saying. But if the music doesn't resonate with me, I really don't feel anything for it. I'm more of a musician's musician, I guess, because it's the chord changes and it's the rhythm that really do it for me. But I mean, I'm a writer, so obviously I love words. And when those two things combine perfectly, that's the best thing in the world. when the sung line is just perfectly supported by the right feeling from the music. Oh, that's the best.
Yeah. You know, I'm probably the mirror image of you when it comes to that, you know, and you know, mentioning Wilco, that's the lyrics are pretty poetic. I like literary references in music. I like hearing lyrics that I know that the lyricist is well read. You know, I just, there's something about it. And so I was drawn into them, with a song that they very masterfully combine both those things. You should listen to a song called She's Ajar. And you'll know exactly what you'll hear it. You can, you know, you can feel the lyrics and you can feel the music. But I never even realized until I got deeper into their catalog and their later stuff that it became apparent to me for the first time, like, wow, they really like are trying to evoke an emotional response instrumentally in a way that I just never noticed before. From an artist, and they do that very effectively. And that was, in reading the writing of, Jeff Tweedy, that's his band, and he writes most of the music and lyrics. He pointed out that his approach to songwriting is to evoke an emotional response with the music first, always.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Which, yeah, just interesting stuff, you know? I'm such I'll nerd out on music for, you know, it's nice to talk to somebody who's really into it. Because not everybody is. And it just kind of baffles me when I meet somebody who, well, you say, what kind of music do you like? Well, I don't know. I just listen, you know?
Right.
Well, like, I listen, and then I listen to every record they ever made, and then I, you know, study the progression of how their music evolved throughout. You know, I mean, I go deep, and it's something, it's, you know, part of who I am is that, you know, I get really into something and I go deep into it, and a little bit obsessively.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I feel that. And it's funny. Sometimes you'll mention a band to someone and they're like, oh yeah, I know them. And they name like whatever the most popular song is by them. And you try to talk more about it and they don't even know any of the albums. And I'm like, do you really like that band? I don't know. Like, do you, or people who don't connect, musically, I don't even know how to really talk to those people. I just want to be like, do you have emotions?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Well, it just, it colors life. It enriches life so much that I just don't know why someone would want to deprive themselves of that. I don't know how you wouldn't respond to that and want more of, you know?
Right. It's an interesting thought experiment. Just, you know, trying to imagine being such a different type of person. I'm sure they respond to something else, or maybe they just don't respond to art in the same way. And it's hard for me to imagine what that's like. Some ways it sounds kind of maybe like life's a little easier if you don't get totally, you know, struck by things all the time the way that creative people are. But
I don't know. I like it this way.
Yeah, me too.
I prefer it this way.
I'll take the negative.
But I do go periods of time where I'll be in my car and I won't listen to anything. I mean, I'm not constantly, but now my car is the primary place where I really like digest music. Like if there's a record that I've been waiting for and I really want to hear it in detail, it ends up happening in the car for some reason.
Yep.
Do you have a vinyl collection? Or are you?
A pretty small one, but I think since, I don't know, however many years I've been on Apple Music, and I just love being able to instantly get pretty much every recording except for super niche stuff. And I also, I feel that about listening to things in the car because it's such a bubble. And I think my brain just kind of goes on its like spinny mode when I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a lot of creative ideas when I'm driving too. And things just kind of like, I don't know, it's like a different, less analytic brain mode. And I think it's perfect for listening to music or podcasts if they're, you know, kind of deep and different stories.
So what podcasts do you listen to?
I'm kind of all over the place. I get so many recommendations that I lately, you know, with my own, you know, getting picked up and going on iHeartRadio and stuff, I just kind of like listen to whatever someone sends me, and I'll listen to like one episode and then I'll realize my queue is like 30 deep and I have to catch up. But I'm trying to think if there's anything I listen to consistently that's still coming out. I don't know. I'm still just trying to, I feel like it's the same thing as music. I'm still just trying to get the whole range of it. There's so much stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, my basket is so full. I can't even like pull out. I'm trying to think of the most recent one. I listened to the whole thing. Let's see. Probably the most recent one I can think of listening to the entire series was the New York Times 1619. And that's like a historical one about slavery in America how it influenced like every part of America. So I think that's pretty good listening for anyone who's American.
Yeah, no,
pretty important.
I saw that. I didn't go down that rabbit hole yet, but it's one I, you know, earmarked or dog-eared or whatever.
Yeah. They have a really good episode about music and the origins of American music that I think you'd enjoy if you don't listen to the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I love history too. So, but certain aspects of history, it's almost like I got to be in the right mood or whatever. But have you ever listened to Dear Sugar, Cheryl Strayed's podcast?
Yeah, a little bit. That one's really cool. Really great literary references from Steve Almond on there too.
Yeah. I like her stuff, and that's the kind of writing I like most, you know?
Yeah. Me too. Yeah.
Yeah. There's one, I'm not a huge podcast listener, honestly, but I have, there are a couple that I've listened to sporadically for more than a decade. Right.
Okay.
One is Mark Maron, WTF.
Yeah.
Which I love. I just love the guests he has. And part of what I wanted to do with this podcast, you know, it was the sorts of conversations that he has with people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is, it's called Yeah, Dude. And
I don't know that.
it's been around. They have like probably 1,000 episodes now. It's been around for almost 15 years.
Yeah.
And it's these two guys in LA who are buddies, and they do an episode a week, and they just kind of goof on each other, and they goof on like bizarre stories in the news or things happening in culture, and it's just funny, and it's dry. It's my type of humor too. But yeah, that's another one. You should check that one out too. They always play, they always play a song at the beginning and a song at the end, and it's always something like obscure. And, I've found some pretty cool music that way. And that's actually what I took that. I borrowed that from them, for the first 8 months I was doing this. I bought a license from BMI to use.
Oh, wow.
And, as it turns out, Universal Music didn't like, that. So, but yeah, I was kind of choosing a song to begin each episode and one to end each episode, which related to either the conversation or the guest or something, you know?
Yep.
And I thought that would, you know, it was another creative thing to do, and people liked it, but unfortunately I had to stop doing it. So I ended up.
Now I
use like Creative Commons stuff.
Right.
Which I'm relatively happy with, and it actually makes it easier to edit. You know, I don't have to go to the trouble of choosing the songs sometimes was the hardest part of doing an episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it has simplified things. And the other thing is, I think in the beginning it was important to me to do that, and maybe I didn't realize it at the time, but I wasn't as confident in what I was doing with the show that people would respond to it, that I was kind of leaning on the music a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And by the time that happened, I had a good head of steam, and I didn't feel like I needed to worry about that anymore. So yeah. But what I did have to do is go back and edit like 50 episodes.
Which
was a pain in the butt, because I had some good content, you know, and I wasn't going to just forget about it. So,
yeah, I had to, if you want to talk about a lot of work hours redoing things. So I redid my entire first season, like from scratch, because when I put out my first season, I used a bunch of copyrighted music because I was nobody and I didn't think anyone was going to ever listen to it. And since it's also a memoir, I have very specific memories tied to very specific songs. And I wanted that specific song by the Smashing Pumpkins to be playing in the opening theme from when I was 11, and I was playing along to that Smashing Pumpkins song. So I initially just put it in there. But then when I signed with iHeartRadio, even though, you know, they're iHeartRadio and they own all the songs in the world or whatever, I had to find a solution to that. So I worked with other musicians and audio engineers, and we created new songs that are kind of reminiscent of the song that should be there. But, and it was actually, it was, I mean, it was a ton of work, but it was really fun, because if you just take the original song and you just change a couple notes, sometimes it just sounds bad, you know, because it sounds like, oh, it's trying to be that song by the Smashing Pumpkins, and you can just tell, and it's just like a watered down version of that. So you kind of have to actually make a new song in order for it to be good. Like, and it sometimes something that doesn't even sound totally like the original song is actually better, because it's its own thing, and it'll just be more fun to listen to. So that was a really, I mean, it was a crazy amount of work, but it was pretty fun.
Yeah, I imagine it was. I mean, one thing I've thought about doing with my show is at some point doing some sort of contest or promotion where, you know, have artists create a theme song, you know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I have learned, you know, like this podcast thing, like, if you allow yourself, can be a 24-hour-a-day thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, absolutely.
The work is never ending, really, to promote it and all that stuff. And, it's a lot, right?
It is a lot. I keep telling people, like, oh, you know, when they ask about what I'm doing for work or whatever, and I say, I've been unemployed for whatever, 5 months now, and yet I've worked harder than I ever have in my life, like every day, all day.
Well, one thing I was able to do is find a sponsor. So that has helped a little bit. And I'm hoping that as time goes on, I can do more of that. You know, I don't want it to be crazy full of ads, and I want them to be relevant.
Right.
But yeah, every little bit helps. Yeah, but, it's just, right now, I'm redoing my website, which is just beginning to become overwhelming because I'm changing platforms and, but, you know, I had a professional website where I host my podcast, but it's not really a podcast website. So, I got some help. Instead of doing it all on my own, I found somebody. I got to a point and used some of that sponsorship money to pay an expert to help me get the SEO thing going. And so I'm in the midst of all that right now. And trying not to think hard, because some things like that, I want to know enough to be able to do it and understand it, but
right.
I'm just not that interested in learning all about Google Analytics.
Yeah.
I'm just not.
Same here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
there's just too many things.
Yeah. I mean, it goes on and on. So tell me about your musical career. Tell me about your band.
Sure. So, my band is called Banana. And it's really influenced by the same stuff I've loved since high school. So, you know, late or early to mid 90s alt rock kind of grungy stuff. The Pixies and Weezer and Smashing Pumpkins. And I am the leader. I write the songs, I play bass and sometimes guitar, and I sing. And we have put out 2 EPs so far, 2 6-song EPs, working on more. But with the podcast, the music's really taken a little bit of a backseat. because, yeah, like we were just talking about, the time suck is absolutely endless on podcast stuff. But music will always be, I think I'll always be in a band. I'm sure even when I'm an old person, I'll be playing, at least be playing covers and whatever. But I still, up until the pandemic hit, I was still playing at least a couple times a month and still playing college house parties and little bars and clubs and wherever. So I'm still pretty active.
So are you doing any Instagram live stuff with music?
I haven't yet, but I actually just got asked to do one. So I'm going to be doing one on Friday with a band. So I'm going to be jumping on to the Instagram of a band called, I think it's called I'm Winded. And I'll be doing a solo set since my bandmates don't all live with me. And yeah, I'll be playing a few songs there and hopefully getting some interest because I have a few tapes I need to sell and some t-shirts for Banana.
Tapes. You have cassettes?
Yeah. Yeah. So actually both of our EPs we put out on cassette. And if you buy a cassette, it comes with an MP3 download code to download the whole album. And then if you have a cassette player, you can play it, or it's just a fun little artifact with the artwork on it.
That's so great. Yeah. Have you heard Father John Misty?
Yeah, I know him.
Oh man. I love that stuff. That's one of the best shows that I've seen in the last couple of years was him.
Oh, really?
He's really good live. Yeah. Cool. But he, a couple of his records put out on cassette, which is kind of cracks me up just because of the generation that I come from, you know, like the idea of putting something out on cassette. So I was in middle school when they basically stopped pressing records. Mm-hmm. Cassettes were available. 8-tracks were over when I was really little. Like my older siblings had those, but I always bought records and I remember like being pissed because, oh, now I got to buy cassettes and records aren't available anymore. And then not long after that, CDs started to come out, which was a little bit better, but I always liked the artwork and the, you know, I always loved albums, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I have a probably 300 of them sitting next to me, a few feet away. Yeah. So I love vinyl, but yeah, so it's just interesting to me that cassettes are coming back and, I have some that have been in a closet. Are they cheap to make?
Yeah, that's the thing. They're cheap to put out. And I mean, most people, especially younger people, only listen to music on their phone.
Right.
Or maybe their computer. So I don't want to just sell a slip of paper with a download code on it. I want to sell something. And a CD, there's almost no point in printing it because they, you know, kids don't have them. But some kids have tape decks. And at least they're cute and you can easily put them on a shelf. And so that's kind of the solution for us DIY people is to most of us do tapes now.
That's really cool. Yeah. I've bought a few CDs directly from band members over the years who burned them themselves and put them in a little paper cover with the handwritten name of the band on it. If you had to compare Banana to one band, what would it be?
Oof, that's really tough. We're such a mixture of things. I'm trying to think of what people have told me. I've heard everything from Weezer to the Cranberries to Pixies, I guess I'd say Pixies. I don't know. Okay. That might be the closest because they're kind of loud and quiet and weird.
Oh, like okay. Yeah. That first Weezer record. It's just unbelievable, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So by the way you said Cranberries, I take it you don't like that comparison to Cranberries.
Cranberries. It was confusing.
Yeah.
I like the cranberries. I was just like, our music doesn't really fit that. Maybe I think it was the way I was singing on one particular song that we don't play that much anymore. But and we've changed a little bit. Like my first EP, I had written completely solo, and so it was a little more like just confessional. Like that one more started with the lyrics, I think, than focusing on the music and then adding lyrics later. And so that one's a little more, it still has pretty, heavy rock and metal parts, but the newer one I wrote kind of with my bandmates in like band practice jam session. So songs started with like, oh, this is a cool heavy riff, let's put it with another one, and then I'll throw some words on top of it that kind of don't mean much but could be construed to mean something, and kind of go with it. So we've evolved a little bit, and I'd like to do something different next, maybe something more like fun and dancey or funky post-punk kind of thing.
So I know you're going to close with the song for us. So yep. I can't wait to hear that. But, it's funny. The last question I ask all my guests is if there was a time in your life when the younger version of yourself needed some support or needed some advice, when was it? And what would you say to her? But this is like your entire podcast. So.
Yeah, go listen to the whole season of Dear Young Rocker.
If there was one message, maybe we'll amend it for you and say for the typical 14-year-old girl who, or maybe the 14-year-old girl like you, what would you say to her?
Yeah. In so many words, it is all going to be okay. You cannot at this point make a decision that's going to ruin your whole life, even though everything feels like it is. None of it's as big of a deal as you think. And you have so much more power in the world than you probably think you do. You probably feel like you have absolutely none, and that you can't say anything to change anyone's mind or get anything you want to happen in life. But you, believe it or not, young lady, possess all the power in the world, and you just need to believe you have it because it's there.
That's great. Well, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you, Chelsea. Let's hear it.
Thank you. Okay. So this song is called Doomed, and it's about kind of dealing with social anxiety, I guess.
Okay.
Little hungry all the time means the diet's working. I don't think I function well on an empty stomach. Little hungry all the time means the diet's working. I don't think I function well on an empty stomach. Doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am cursed in the worst ways to be. To be. Be me cursed in the worst ways to be me. I am. I am. practicing self-sabotage. I can make you hate me. I'm just scared of everyone. There's always excuses practiced in self-sabotage. I can make me hate me. I'm just scared of everyone. There's always excuses. Doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am cursed in the worst ways to be. To be. See me cursed in the worst ways to be. To be me. I am. I am.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
I hear the Pixies.
Yep.
So maybe what you could do, I think you probably have a better sound, at least for the song. Would you mind sending me that? And if nothing else, I'll use your recording of the song. Patch that in.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Sure. I can also just, I could send you the whole thing too, unless you don't need it, or I can just send the song.
No, that's fine. Send the whole thing. Whatever's easier for you, and I'll figure it out, okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
So, what I've been doing with these, because, I mean, I was only doing one a week. Eventually, I wanted to do two a week, and that was kind of my goal for the spring. So, I mean, now everybody's got time to be interviewed for podcasts. So, like,
right.
I have, like, several episodes. So it would be a couple weeks, 2 or 3 weeks before it comes out. So what I've been doing in the short term, so I don't have to wait, is I'm posting it on a page on my website, and then I'll give you a link and like a preview thing before it's actually in the feed. So I'll post it somewhere for a limited period of time, and then it'll come out, so that way I can promote it a couple different times too, you know?
Yep.
So sound right. good?
Sounds like a plan. Yeah. All right. I'll share that around.
As soon as you send me this thing, I'll edit it and I'll get this thing done. Okay.
Okay. I'll just let you know that, you know, you should listen through, just because there was one point, I think I accidentally pressed the space bar. So there might be like 10 seconds where it was not recording somewhere around the middle, but I think I was saying something not that interesting anyway.
Oh, so you mean on your end, you didn't get the recording?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's just like, I think it's, I don't know, you can even just write this down, but it's at 37 minutes and 30 seconds. It looks like I forgot to. Or I accidentally turned the recording off for like 15 seconds, I think. So
okay,
there's just a gap that you might want to edit that out.
We'll figure it out.
Skip to the next question or whatever. But just wanted to give you a heads up. But that is all saved, and I will send that to you right now. And do you need like a PR picture? Or any? Oh, I already sent you.
You sent me all that stuff.
Yeah. That's so great. That is such a smart idea that you do that up front. Because I just keep chasing people down for forms and pictures and stuff after interviews. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're a genius. I'm going to start doing that.
Well, I don't know about that, but it works. It works. Yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I appreciate you. And you have I love the picture of you with the guitar too. That's a great picture. It's going to make for a great cover art. So
yeah, cool.
All right.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks. I had a great time talking.
Good. I was going to say, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I have. And, you know, anytime, like, you're going to do great things, obviously. I mean, you're going to end up getting a book published and, you know, you're going to have other projects. And so, anytime you want to come on and, talk about that stuff or even just nerd out on music, I'd love to have you back.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, this was a fun one. So
good.
I will see you on the internet.
All right. Thank you.
So this song is called Doomed, and it's about kind of dealing with social anxiety, I guess. Little hungry all the time means the diet's working. I don't think I function well on an empty stomach. Little hungry all the time means the diet's working. I don't think I function well on an empty stomach. Doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am cursed in the worst ways to be me. Cursed in the worst ways to be me. Ha, ha. I am. I am. Practiced in self-sabotage, I can make you hate me. I'm just scared of everyone. There's always excuses practiced in self-sabotage. I can make me hate me. I'm just scared of everyone. There's always excuses. Doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am doomed to miss out on everything I am. I am cursed in the worst ways to be me. Cursed in the worst ways to be me. I am. I am. I am. I am. Thank you.
Chelsea Urson. Thanks for listening to the show. You can learn more about Chelsea by following the links in the show notes. Visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you want to learn more about the show, suggest a topic, or if you're interested in becoming a sponsor, you can email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can gain access to supplemental content as well as early access to episodes. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. You can find us all over social media on Facebook and Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. So I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Chelsea. Check out her podcast, Dear Young Rocker. I appreciate you listening, and I hope you keep coming back. Be well, be healthy, wear a mask, be nice. The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.